Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Support the podcast on Patreon by joining the It's All Cobblers to Me fan club. Every month, you'll receive access to exclusive bonus content, such as our Meet the Staff series, hear our player interviews before anyone else, and be invited to regular meetups. By joining the fan club, you'll be helping us to continue our sponsorship of NTFC women's player Abby Bruin and enable us to keep the podcast and all our other content going to the high standards you expect. To join the fan club, go to patreon.com/cobblers2me.
Again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup and Northampton 3!
Yeah!
Goal!
Get
it! Hello, everyone, and welcome to It's All Cobblers to Me and a special episode on Tracy Crouch's fan-led review. I'm joined by Charles Commins. How are you, Charles?
I'm on mute. Thank you.
It's good. On mute.
Thank you, mate. Yeah.
It's a good start.
2 years later, I'm still struggling with that.
It's still on mute. We're still on Zoom. More importantly, sorry, Charles, we're joined by our very own chairman, Kelvin Thomas, today. How are things, Kelvin?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Luckily, I'm not on mute. So
good.
I think you might surprise Charles then.
Yeah, good stuff. And you're back over here at the moment. I can see.
I am enjoying this rather frosty morning here this morning. But yeah, no, I am. I've been over since quite a while. I'm here till middle of February, I think.
Nice. Is that just for transfer window reasons, or just for?
No, just because I'm spending a bit more time over here, and so really not necessarily transfer window, because that's not the most important thing in terms of being here. As long as I'm on the end of a phone, but it does help. I was able to spend some more time with James and talk about how we're doing and et cetera, et cetera.
Good stuff. So we're here to talk about the fan-led review that was put together and chaired by Tracy Crouch MP and published on 24th of November 2021, and how it impacts clubs like the Cobblers. So as a quick intro as to what it is, if you don't know already, supporters groups from around 130 different clubs took part, including the Northampton Town Supporters Trust, I believe, along with football authorities, during more than 100 hours of evidence gathering sessions to produce the report. The review aims to explore ways of improving the governance, ownership and financial sustainability of clubs in English football and engage extensively with fans to ensure any recommendations are led by fans' experience and interests. So, Kelvin, first, I wanted to get your overall reaction to the review when you first read it.
Obviously, Tracy had put together a summary letter previously as well. So we were half expecting a lot of the stuff, and I'd had a lot of conversation behind the scenes about it. And I thought it was a very, very good report. I also watched Tracy's presentation to the select committee, and I thought she she carried herself very well, and she's obviously got a good grasp of some of the issues and looking, and more importantly, some potential solutions for that. So I think overall, as a football club and personally, we absolutely support a lot of the recommendations in there.
Mm. And how does this kind of thing land at the club? Is it something that's emailed to all the clubs, or do you have to go and seek it out?
No, typically, no. The EFL, we're obviously in a lot of discussion with Tracy as part of this. So they sent the information. Probably they would have been sent the report, and then they review it quickly and then send out the report plus probably their statement, I think it was. So it tends to come across that way to all the directors and owners and chairman, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm. Stuff. So initial thoughts, positive from what you said before. Was there anything in it at all that you kind of thought you don't particularly agree with? Or was it all?
Well, it's all about a balance, isn't it? And I said this, I think if you go back to Project Big Picture, I said at the time on that for Northampton Town Football Club, you could easily support 90% of that. There was probably 10% that you would have looked to negotiate out of that to get to something what looks good right at the end. But, and it's the same with Tracy's report. The big picture about it is the financing and the ability to make football clubs sustainable alongside some more regulation to ensure that football clubs act in a decent and proper way. With that increased financing. So that's the most important aspect of what needs to be fixed within football as a whole. So some of the other stuff you would look at, and obviously we've looked at this stuff, and we've looked at acts, things like we've got an advisory panel that probably hasn't done as much recently because of, some of that's because of COVID, et cetera. So that, you could see that becoming more of a shadow board, as you go along. We've obviously got brought a fans a director on with Tom. I think that's been incredibly positive. And some of that decision was born out of watching where the direction that Tracy was going in terms of her report. So, things like that. People have said to me, what do you think about the golden share? The truth is, do you want to give up any control? Not always, but the truth is that some of the things that the golden share would I'm quite an old-fashioned person, quite an old-fashioned football person, so I wouldn't be looking to change logos, kit colors, et cetera, et cetera. So, we're pretty neutral on that. So those are the sort of things. So those are the sort of things people would see as a negative. Some people would see as a negative, but we're pretty, we're pretty unfazed by that. So as long as the report, independent regulator is all obviously going to be a hot topic. There will be people at the higher end of the game that will be very, very much against that, I would have thought, in the Premier League. And again, if it gets us to where we need to get to, then I have no issue with it. I personally believe if football clubs were sustainable, then you would have less need for an independent regulator.
Mm.
I think the issues in football are more based around the fact that it's not a sustainable business, as opposed to the regulation of football.
Would you say, though, that in order to get there, you kind of therefore need a regulator in place? Because at the moment, essentially, the bigger clubs, like, obviously the Premier League ones, but then the likes of Sunderland, Ipswich, etc., they can just go and spend what they want and go and do that, and then potentially fall into trouble like they have done. So you kind of need the regulator in the first place, just to almost steady the ship, first of all.
I think when this first came out, I've actually changed my mind on the regulation, mainly due to that point. To the regulator, I would say I was in the camp of being against a regulator, because I didn't think we needed it. But then seeing how things have moved on, I think we need it to get to the point of a better financial model. So that's where I think it becomes important. I had a good long chat with Nigel at Orient And we talked about this quite a lot, and he was very much in for, he was very much for an independent regulator. And I listened to the reasons why, and I understood the reasons why a lot more. So you know, and as chairman, we talk about it quite a bit, you know, outside of official meetings. And I think I've probably, I think we would be supportive of an independent regulator, especially or if it gets us to where we need to get to on the financial reforms.
Mm. So that was the first couple of recommendations that was given in the report to ensure long-term sustainability of football, creating this new independent regulator for English football, shortened to IREF. They also mentioned new owners and directors tests for clubs being established by IREF that replaces the three existing tests. I was just interested in what these existing tests are, because I wasn't entirely sure what.
Well, the owners and directors test in the EFL is around a lot of it is checks criminal backgrounds, company ownership background, directorship backgrounds, whether you have the ability to do what you say you can do, financial background. So the owners, I think what the independent regulator would try and achieve, and I don't know how they do this, but because it's quite an interesting one, because the owners and directors test is looking backwards, really. And you know, I think what fans want and what an independent regulator would want would be to look forwards and to understand how the decision making of an owner will affect you as a fan and as a football club. Now, I do think that's very, very difficult, because football clubs are such fluid and moving objects, as it were, or businesses. They're, you know, such fluid businesses that things change on a daily basis. And we as owners do get held up on, you know, things that we said 5 years ago, and then that comes out all the time as you said this, but you know, so many things change in that period that sometimes that's a little unfair. But it's how do you legislate for decision making, I guess, is the question. It's relatively easy to find to be able to prove that somebody has had problems in the past. How easy is it to then regulate for the decisions they're going to make in the future? Yeah, that's going to be a tough ask. But once again, and I keep harping back to this, if you take away the requirement for owner financing as much as it is right now, then some of those problems go away, because then most of the problems that owners have is when they run out of money. You know, you've seen it at Northampton. You know, when you run out of money and you can't fund what the club needs, then there are issues, and suddenly you become a bad owner, where you weren't a bad owner 5 years ago when you were funding the club, but all of a sudden you're a bad owner. But a lot of that is decision making, and again, how do you regulate for that? That's the question I would have. But you know, that would be part of the independent regulator's job. So going back to your original question, the EFL owners and directors test is, you know, it's quite stringent in terms of what's happened in the past, but it's now looking at, I think it's now looking at what can you legislate for the future.
Mm. And I think that's, from what I gather from reading the report, that's one of the things they want to do, is to continually check things and continually make sure that it's not just you're an okay director, you're an okay owner, and then just get on with it. It's more, we're going to keep checking and keep like checking directors, for example, and stuff as we go, to keep that ticking over. So,
well, it comes down to all of the, you know, keeping an eye on everything that happens. Like what I've said, I recommended a couple of years ago, and they've started, you know, a few of us got together and we recommended a points deduction for non-payment of wages and an automatic points deduction, because the problem is if you look at it, the biggest, in our opinion, the biggest indication there's financial issues at the club is when the wages don't get paid. And it's the thing that everyone jumps up and down on. And if you look at it, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, one of the biggest issues that football faced was the insolvency problems. So what happened was they produced very, very strict insolvency rules, which were you would lose points. So as owners, as football clubs, the last thing you want to do is lose points. You know, it's one of the last things you want to do. So if you knew that if you didn't pay your wages on time, that you lost points, it changes thinking, in our opinion. And that should have happened years ago. It should have happened years ago. So that sort of, you know, up-to-date reporting is very, very important. What's happened, as you've seen in certain examples like Derby or Bury is a prime example of it. And I think some of this came out of the independent report about Bury, is they were missing, they were Oldham as well, were missing payment dates. And it was going on 3, 4, 5 months before any sort of action was taken. And then it ended up having to be retrospective action so that you actually got the punishment in the following season. So if you straight away, you had no choice that within 7 days you lost points, then it would take care of the issue right there and then. And owners would have a different decision when they do have those problems.
Would that be, when you talk about wages, for every member of staff? So that therefore, is there a way to actually, you know, somebody to govern the fact that playing side of the club and the management side of the club, for want of a better phrase, so that essentially it couldn't be a case of, right, well, what we'll do is we'll make sure that we pay the players because that's what the EFL care about. I'm not saying that they don't care about James and Gareth and other people, but there's not going to, it would be the same punishment. There wouldn't be a way for an owner or a chairman or somebody to actually choose between the playing side of the club and the rest of it.
Well, that happens anyway. That happens in insolvency issues anyway. And I think it would be, I think the reality is the owners would try and pay the players first, but that would be the majority of the issue. You know, if you looked at a salary cost at the end of the month, you know, you're probably talking, you know, your football club, I don't know, so I off the top of my head, 70% of it being players. So if you had an issue, you would struggle to pay. You know, if you had an issue playing the players, then finding the money to pay the rest of the wages wouldn't be as difficult, if you understand what I mean. But I think it should be all wages. It should be, you know, we're just believers that, you know, people work and they should get paid. You know, so the wages are that's the cost of doing business. You've got to pay the wages. So, you know, no matter what happens. So, obviously the Football League and the FA have more control over the contracts for players. So they know what those costs are. And we are quite, you know, the football clubs are regulated in that way. You know, wage costs and are well known to the leagues and, you know, they have, it's easier for them to regulate. Some of the issue with regulation is all about capacity as well. You know, let's not forget, you know, there are 72 clubs across the EFL. That's a lot of information to be going through and keep. If we're talking about up to date reporting and, you know, on time reporting, that's a lot of information. So that there would need to be investment into the regulatory body anyway. So and I think Tracy deals with that in her report in terms of the independent regulator. That's not one person sitting up top going, okay, you do this, you do that. That I think she was talking about a £5 million a year cost. You know, in terms of that office, that £5 million is a decent amount of money each year in terms of staffing level. So.
So the next thing the report mentions is football needing to improve equality, diversity and inclusion in clubs with committed EDI action plans. That's again, regularly assessed by the IRF. I know we're pretty good at that kind of thing at the moment. How do you see that working for the rest of football?
I think football is pretty good. It with a lot of that stuff in general. I think obviously it's all important here at Northampton, and that's, You can see that in all we do, from all the way through, from the professional aspect of the club to the community aspect of the club. And I think football in general, it's almost, you don't want to belittle it or anything, but it's almost standard. I think, well, for us, it's a standard. It's what we do and et cetera. And I think in football terms, I think there's always issues. There's always going to be issues. I think there's a lot of social media issues and et cetera, that football deals with on a daily basis and continues to deal with certain levels of abuse, et cetera. But I think in general terms, I think football is relatively inclusive and in a lot of aspects. And but as in society, that, you know, I always say that football reflects society as well. And there are issues that we continually have to battle and continually have to work through. So I think including it in the report and having it as a something that is judged and you know, kept an eye on as well is very important.
Mm-hmm. The next one we touched on a little bit earlier in terms of the shadow boards. We know we've got Tom in place. I'm sure he's not causing you too many headaches so far, but it's recommendation that supporters should be properly consulted by the clubs and taking key decisions, and by the means of that they're looking for is by the creation of a shadow board. Is that something that you can see happening at the Cobblers?
Well, we had it in a way with the advisory panel, which we set up a few years ago. COVID had an impact on that, I think. And I think it's quite interesting, because I think the advisory panels and the shadow board type of things lose momentum when people feel the club's being run pretty well. So and it's similar to supporters trust as well. I think when the majority of people think the club's being run well, then certain, you know, aspects of, you know, fan engagement, but you know, fans getting together, kind of, it loses the momentum, because people don't necessarily, in general, I believe football fans don't necessarily want to run their football club. You know, the majority of people don't want to do that. So however, people will want to run their football club if they feel the football club's not being run very well. So what happens is when at the times of, you know, don't forget, we came in at a time that where the club was on its knees. I've done a similar thing at Oxford years ago. And so you see a lot of momentum around advisory boards, supporters trusts, and advisory panels, and fan, that sort of fan to fan engagement, because they feel like there's problems. What happens is when the club is on an even keel, say, and it seems to be running quite well, that you lose quite a lot of momentum. And I think we saw that with the advisory panel. I think that was, you know, quite well supported initially, and then it kind of waned. And I think what we've done is, especially recently, and bringing Tom on has been fantastically positive, you know, and I think Dan would have been very positive as well. But the one thing about Tom, as I say, is, you know, if you don't like Tom or you can't get along with Tom, then it tends to be your problem and not Tom's problem. If that's the way I look at Tom, and I've got, you know, so, and he's been wonderfully useful in terms of just as a sounding board more than anything else in decisions that we make. And he's come to us with ideas, and he's come to us with things that he wants to try and get accomplished. And I think that, you know, as you've seen over the last sort of few months, doing the surveys, I think, has been tremendously important, and in terms of fan engagement, I think that's important, because the reality is, what better way to find out what the fans think than to ask them, you know? So, you know, and I think that's, you know, and so for us, you know, supporter engagement isn't scary. I think we do it on a daily basis. We talk to fans on a daily basis, and, you know, it's always difficult, because there are so many different supporter groups, whether they're organized or not organized. There are groups of people within your fan base always, you know, you are intrinsically, you are, as It's All Cobblers to Me podcast, are your own sort of group within our fan base, you know, and there is a disability group that isn't organized, but it is a group, you know, a group of, you know, some of our disabled supporters that talk to each other. So they, you know, they do form their own group, or you'll have, you know, the travel clubs, the Supporters Trust Travel Club, Six Fields Travel Club, and Norman, the independent travel clubs, are, you know, their own groups in its own way. So we as a club have to try and especially, and now with Tom on board, it's helpful because you need to try and cross over all the groups and talk to everyone and take everyone's opinion in, and try and balance that with how as a, you know, as a club, we what direction we want to go in.
So going back to the shadow board as such, is that something that you would bring back towards what was the advisory panel at the Cobblers? If it was brought in as a regulation, would that be something that you would be comfortable with, or just move the advisory absolutely. Group into kind of that position, or would it be look a little bit different to the advisory group?
I would have to look at the detail and what the regulation was. And if it does come in even as a regulation, I'm not sure if that will come in as a regulation or a recommendation. You'd have to look at who needs to be on that and et cetera. And the advisory panel, I would guess that the advisory panel was a bit more open to everybody. And if I remember correctly, we did. The only stipulation is we had a couple of trust members on there that we requested. But I think with the more of a shadow board, you'd probably have to try and make sure that you did have a representative viewpoint or a representative board, as opposed to just making it open. So therefore, you know, it might be a case that you do have to have a disabled supporter, or you might, you know, you have to look at the inclusion aspect of a board anyway, and see which way you go forward from there. So yes, it wouldn't be, you know, going back to your original point, it wouldn't be an issue, and I think it would be a useful addition.
And with things like that, do you see any kind of potential, not conflict, but how kind of does it work in practice, do you think, in terms of the board making decisions? How much decision making power do you think they would have?
I think in the recommendation, it's not a decision making body, it's a consultative body. So okay. I think looking at it again, I don't know the actual detail what's going to end up coming out, but what I read a little bit was it would be a consultative body where, you know, the board of the club would, and I see Tom being a bridge, Tom being a bridge on that board. You know, he would bridge that board with the existing board.
I know you've spoken about this next one before. The Premier League should guarantee, it recommends, that its support to the pyramid make additional proportionate contributions to further support football. This is something that's been immediately shot down by a lot of CEOs in the Premier League. But what are your initial thoughts on that?
Well, it's obviously going to be that's going to be the most contentious issue. And this is where we get to the crux of the whole report and the whole issues in football. And I've said it for a long time. The biggest problem football faces is the reliance on owner financing. If you look at all the examples of clubs getting in trouble, it's at the point where the owner, who has been putting a lot of money in, has decided, I don't have the money, I don't want to put it in. My partner has told me that I shouldn't be spending so much money on a football club, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if you look at Derby is a perfect example. It's up the road. You would look at Derby and think, what a fantastic club. What Derby is looking for right now is Mel Morris 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when Mel Morris is now seen as doing Derby down. But the truth is, if you were looking for somebody now to take over Derby, you would want Mel Morris 10 years ago, because the reality is he's a fan. He's made a lot of money in another business. He wants to run his football club and he's put a lot of money in. And that's what really you're looking for. And the reason you're looking for that every time is because football clubs aren't sustainable. And the reason why football clubs aren't sustainable is because the model is the inflation in football has gone up so much that it's meant that there's more and more reliance on owner funding. So the moment that Mel decides that he doesn't want to put the money in, or he hasn't got the money, or et cetera, I don't know the exact reasons, Derby suddenly becomes a basket case. Well, it wasn't a basket case when Mel was writing the checks. You know, my argument always is it's a basket case. It was a basket case when Mel was writing the checks, and it continues to be a basket case, except it hasn't got any cash. So now it's a basket case with administrators running it and trying to find another Mel Morris. So the fundamental part of that is not necessarily Mel, is not necessarily administrators. The fundamental issue with that is the reliance on Mel's money. And I'm not making this personal with Mel and Derby, but it's a good example because, you know, what happens to Chelsea if Abramovich we pulled out? What happens to Man City if the ruling family Abu Dhabi pull out? You know, those are the questions that we need to ask ourselves in general, and as a global look at football. And you know, and we finance Northampton. There's, you know. Yes, we obviously, there are people that say we should be sustainable, but we should be sustainable. We'd love to be sustainable. We, you know, it's funny because people complain about us not being sustainable to the people that would probably the ones that want it to be sustainable more than anyone, you know, because we're writing the checks to fund it. But we also know and we take a view that says, you know, if we had one of the lowest budgets in the league, we would be sustainable, but would we be competitive? You know, that's the question that you always ask is, you know, and you're trying to make decisions that make you as competitive as possible within your parameters of what you're comfortable spending. You know, we could all go out, you know, and it's an interesting point. And we talk about, let's say when we first took over, you know, we came in and we looked at it and the playing budget was a decent playing budget. You know, we had a good side, but we came to January and actually, interestingly, we'll end up putting as much in this window, or we've offered to put as much in this window as we did in that window. Because you look at it and you go, you know, January is a terrible time to buy a player, but not a bad time for a loan player. And because we've had success with that. And we, you know, we bought James in, we bought John in. I think Danny Rose came in at that time, and it had a big impact on our season back then. And you know, and even if you look at the last promotion, Callum Morton came in, had a massive impact on our season, you know, and now we've got to look at this January and try and repeat the same sort of thing. But these are decisions that we're making, not in a sustainable way. This isn't making Northampton more sustainable. This is costing more money. But what do you do? Do you sit there and go, do you make a financial decision, a sustainable decision, or do you go, okay, let's offer an amount of money and away we go and sign a few players, which we've done and we'll do, because we're also competitive as well. We want to do well. We want to win games. And then hopefully the problem with football is, you know, yeah, we get promoted and you think, great, you get more money. But guess what? Player wage inflation has gone up so much that all of a sudden you make more money, but you spend it on players anyway. So that's a long answer to what you're saying about the Premier League. The Premier League support the EFL tremendously. There's no question about that. You know, they do fund a lot of the stuff that happens. But they could do more. And this isn't talking about, in my mind, what's important. This isn't us as Football League clubs going, oh, we need the begging bowl out, we need more money. But the reality is the success, in my opinion, the success of the Premier League, part of that success has been the Football League. There's no question about it. I think there's statistics around how many Premier League clubs have played in the Football League. There's statistics around how many players in the Premier League currently have played in the Football League. Similar, look at us. You know, we've got Dominic Ivan and Carl Walker have all made, you know, have all made debuts in, they made their football career debuts at, or football league debuts at the professional debuts at Northampton, you know. And you look at Ivan and Dominic's in the England squad. Carl's been an England player for a long time, and Ivan's probably got a chance of getting in there at some point. But they're all recognised Premier League players. They may not have happened if it wasn't for the Football League. So you have to look down and look at the global aspect. And the Premier League is so successful because of the pyramid underneath it, in my opinion. So the strength of the pyramid is so important. And also on the flip side, the reason why Football League clubs struggle in the financially is because of the player wage inflation that's happened. And if you look at the Premier League have to accept responsibility in that. They have to understand that they've the impact of wage inflation in the Premier League is being seen further down. You know, I talked to Chris about this, Chris Wilder, and when you go back, when you actually look at the amount of money that he was on when he was a Premier League player, it's shocking. It's shocking to think we have young players on more money than Chris Wilder would have been on in the Premier League. You know, under 21s, under 20s, under 22 players on more money. Which just shows you the level of inflation that's happened. Chris was playing in the Premier League. So it's how do you, and the money coming down from the Premier League hasn't kept up with that. So it's a very, very difficult, it's very difficult. And listen, it's not just a Premier League problem. Like in terms of, there are clubs in the Football League that have created that inflation as well. And Salford and Fleetwood and, you know, and Sunderland are all examples of that, and especially at Salford and the Fleetwood, where they're, you know, perceptually not bigger clubs, that they've all created that, helped to create that problem as well. But the reality is, it's the main problem is at the top, and so it's again, it's saying, okay, let's work out, and parachute payments are a big part of that, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But let's see if we can. Get the gap between the Football League clubs and the Premier League clubs to be smaller. And that's not taking everything away from the Premier League. That's taking a little bit away from the Premier League, and it will give the Football League a lot. Let's be honest, you know, the Leagues 1 and 2, one decent transfer fee in the Premier League would take care of Leagues 1 and 2. You know, and it would make every League 1 and 2 sustainable.
I think that's it, isn't it? Because when you look at it and you actually go, well, what's it going to be? I've heard talk about a potential, you know, way of resolving it would be, for example, having some kind of, whether you call it a tax or a levy or something on European or foreign transfers, so that it makes it more attractive for the top clubs to buy British, or from British clubs, and therefore they pay less of a levy, if you like, to the clubs in the EFL than they do if they went and bought a player, I don't know, from the Bundesliga or, you know, Italy or wherever. But in terms of, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's one of those almost horrible things to use as a comparison or an example, but down the road at Peterborough, God's sake, their model is buy cheap, sell high. And, you know, and that's how they therefore, I know the owners still put in an awful lot of money to keep them going as well, but that's kind of how they've been successful. In a way, it's essentially just sort of going, right, well, you know, if you can find a player, the problem for us has been, unfortunately, that we have them earlier, so that the transfer fee maybe isn't as much as what they're getting later on down the road, using Ivan as a prime example of that. But if you were to go and actually turn around and say, look, you know, if you buy from Leagues 1 and 2, you don't have to pay as much money in terms of a levy or a tax or whatever as you would, then maybe that would help sort things out, give that incentive for them to do that.
No, I think there's a lot of ways to deal with it. There's a lot of ways. I think, and I actually think the transfer levy, to be honest with you, from what Tracy's recommendation was on all transfers. It was a percentage on all transfers, so that there was a chunk of change, a chunk of money that could then be distributed to the other clubs. You know, you've got to kind of put this in perspective as well. Like, and I've said this on meetings, with all of this, we're not fighting the. We're fighting the Premier League chief execs and owners, mainly chief execs, really, because they're worried about the bottom line of their football clubs, which is understandable. We're not fighting Premier League fans. You know, and that's why the European Super League caused such a stir with the fans of the football clubs. If you went up to a Tottenham fan or an Arsenal fan or a Man United fan and said, would you support a reduction in, you know, income for the Glazier family of, you know, 5%, which would then take care of football, you know, take care of the lower league football. The majority of football fans say absolutely, because the most football fans see, especially at the Premier League level, see owners as greedy foreigners that come in and trying to take all their money, and actually. Football fans have an empathy for other football fans when you're not competing directly on a Saturday afternoon, or you know, or you're, I don't know, City or United, or you know, Northampton or Peterborough. You know, there is, take away the rivalries, and even with the rivalries, you see it consistently in football. When certain things happen, the rivalries go away, and in society, and so. So I think we have to be careful that we're not fighting the Premier League, and this the disagreement will be with Premier League chief execs, as we've seen, and Premier League owners maybe in the background, but for the majority of Premier League clubs would want the lower leagues to be sorted out. You know, how often do we see it? And I think Premier League clubs in general, we do see it. You do see it on, you know, I've said it on a couple of things. Aston Villa have been wonderful to us as a club, Northampton. They've been really, really good on certain things. Everton did something, you know, at the start of COVID, which was wonderful for us. You know, so I don't think on a one-to-one basis, I don't think there's an issue. I think in general terms, it's like anything. If someone said to me, would you want to reduce your income to support grassroots football, there would be a conversation about it. You'd have to seriously think about it. And it's just a case of, and again, it's in comparison, you're talking about on a yearly basis, it's a Premier League club giving up, you know, 5 million quid or 10 million quid, which seems a tremendous amount of money. But if you actually break it down to Premier League revenues, it's really not. So I think it's, and it's not like you want all the revenue. I think the split is something like 75-25, and then abolish parachute payments. And again, parachute payments are seen as, were probably a fantastic idea at the time. You know, at the time, you know, we are dealing with an agreement, a TV agreement, and agreements like parachute payments of 25 years ago. So that we have to remember that as well. We're not talking about, this is an agreement everyone made a year ago. You know, this is something that was developed 25 years ago when revenues were so much less. And, you know, is there a reason that Fulham beat Reading 7-0? Well, you could indicate that is something to do with parachute payments.
Mm. Yeah, quickly going back to the transfer levy, the thing that struck me, the one opposition that come across the worst to me was Angus Kinnear's, not only from Leeds, this is, not only because he compared it to a Maoist collective, yeah, agriculturalism, but from where his club have been in the last few years, that's a prime example of someone who's seems so disconnected to where a Leeds fan would be. From where they were in League One, almost going out of business, complete collapse of their club, from where they were, it was a massive drop off. Playing the likes of Northampton Town, relegating them, to then building back up again. You talk to a Leeds fan about that kind of thing, and they're probably got so many memories of League One, the way they had to build and scrap and fight their way back up again, compared to a CEO who then's like, complete no to transfer levies. That just really riled me, I think, with that when he came out with stuff like that. Christian Perslow.
Well, I agree. I think the Premier League reaction was from the chief execs wasn't overly measured. Mm. I think it was an immediate reaction and I think Tracy said when she met the select committee, she thinks that a couple of them hadn't actually read the full report seen the headline. So yeah. I think the Premier League are reserving their position a little bit more now. Mm. But, you know, it's hopefully the Tracy's report has been enough to actually get the conversation going in the Football League. If I was the Premier League now, I would try and get ahead of it. I would look at it and go, okay, so we need to do something. The Premier League are obviously going to be very against a regulator. So that's where the discussion is really going to be. Mm. And I don't think they're going to have much choice. So I would look at it and say, okay, can we look at the issues? Can we try and fix the issues or at least get somewhere in between before a regulator comes in and smashes it all apart? You know, can we try and get it to a place where a regulator comes in and says, okay, well, you've sorted out a lot of these issues. We'll continue on that path. If I was at the Premier League, I would probably be looking to do that and saying, okay, how do we get to a position where everyone's comfortable? So when the regulator comes in, they don't have that much to do.
Go on. Sorry, Kelvin. I wanted to bring it back to something that you said. I think you said this in the YouTube video that you recorded before Christmas. I think it was before Christmas. You talked about if we were to run sustainably right now, and live within our means, then that would put us in the bottom two of League Two, in terms of budgets at least. Obviously, football is football. So a lot of the questions are, of course, around, you know, in some of the fan base, is to say, well, how could we therefore make the Cobblers as a business more sustainable, but also keep a competitive budget? Now, I mean, there's been talk, and we've seen it on forums and Facebook and ideas of the new hotel end was an example that going back to the summer, there's also this suggestion or this idea of creating a microbrewery and a what seems to be a stage for a live music venue and things like that. Obviously, they're all crowdfunding and you've talked about that before in terms of supporter-led projects. But is there anything that the football club are maybe even looking at and thinking about? How do we therefore kind of at least get to the point where you're reducing the amount of money that David and yourself have to put into the club to keep it going? Because as you've said on here, I think it's unsustainable for you to keep doing that.
There's two different things there. It's not unsustainable for us to keep doing that, first of all. You know, it's not the right approach, but we own the football club. So we've obviously in our minds, bank accounts and our financial decisions. We've made that decision that we'll continue it as long as we own it. But the reality is the it's quite interesting because the assumption is that we aren't thinking about that every day. You know, the assumption is it is what it is and turn up on a Saturday and watch the football and put the money in. We talk about it every day and we work hard on, and the commercial team work hard on raising more money. Everything that, see, and again, it's that whole sort of living in the real world and not living in the real world. You know, it's that sort of, okay, so the East Stand is the perfect example of it, you know, and that will bring in additional revenue. It will also cost a lot of money to finish. So the reality is, if you look at the financial models that we all have done, and if you look at, say, for example, you know, let's look at a pub, okay? And we have a bar here. We have six. We've talked about opening that up every day. And again, the romance of that is wonderful. The reality of that is something different, you know, because there are some people that would come to it. There are some people that would not come to it. And you have to balance the whether they people would come to it and the investment required for someone to come to it. We think Six Fields as a location for a, you know, a 24-hour bar or a 7-day-a-week bar is a challenge. You know, there's people have a lot of other choices just in this area that are set up more for bars. So the reason pubs are successful in neighborhoods is typically because they are neighborhood pubs. You know, typically Six Fields is a destination location. So what does that mean? Well, a destination location means you need to have really good public transport from where you come from, or you know, or walking distance. You know, we've got great parking here, but a pub is not going to be built around a great parking, because the reality is people are going to have to drive there. And what do you want them to do? You want them to drink, and you don't want them to drink and drive. So the reality is that creates its own challenges. So that's not to say a pub wouldn't work, but then you've got to look at the investment level needs to be put in, you know, and so who pays for that? Who pays for that investment level? Who makes that investment to increase the income? Sometimes I feel that ideas come up and it's just, well, you'll get increased revenue, but then how do you pay for that? How do you invest in that in the first place? So the reality is we do it every day. James is always coming up. Caroline is always coming up with ideas of increasing revenues, et cetera, and what can we do? You know, and we do things that people don't even see, like renting car parks and things like that. That's all to do with increasing revenues, and we do it all the time, because the reality is, myself and David, if James comes up with an idea that reduces our requirement by 50 grand, then James definitely gets a pat on the back. There's no question about it. But if James comes to us with an idea of putting £1 million in and reducing our requirement each year by, you know, 50 grand, then we've got to look at it on its merits, you know, and say, is that a good investment decision for the football club? And that's what you have to look at all the time. And, you know, and it's that balance of what is a good investment and what isn't a good investment. You know, the new hotel end and as I said to Tom from the very start, you know, we're not experts. The reason I've said it from the start is that it's not for us to run, is I have no idea. James has no idea in regards to running a music venue. So this could be a fantastic idea, absolutely wonderful idea, but we don't know how to run one. We don't know how to develop one. We don't know what the market's like. And the truth is, this is a football clubs, because most of your money goes on players, football clubs are very small staffs. You know, if you look at this football club and you think, oh, there's 15 people working here. If you look at all the departments across the football club, they are, you know, one person in the department, one to two people, one and a half people, et cetera, et cetera. So for me to suddenly tell everyone, stop what you're doing in running the club and then let's work on a music venue that we have no idea. That's why it was, you know, Tom had the idea and I said, great, we'll support the idea, but you can't expect us to invest in it. You can't expect us to invest time in it and money in it until we know a lot more detail on whether, and this isn't about us as owners. This isn't about the man. This is a club decision. This is, you know, what's in the best interest of the football club. And so, you know, and we'll, you know, we'll always get criticized. Oh, you know, you telling the fans to run it and all that kind of stuff. No, we're not. We're not saying that at all. But if it's an idea, we're happy to look at any ideas, and we would invest in the right things. But it's, you know, as with most football clubs, our decision is to invest on the playing side. And luckily, that seems to be working right now. We're in the top three, and it's been a good start, a good first half of the season. And we've now got to replicate that. And listen, there's no two ways about it. Without our investment overall, we wouldn't be in the top three. You know, I'm not saying we need credit for that, but that's an investment that we've got a certain amount of money every year that we feel we can put into the football club. I call it investment very loosely. We can put into the football club and we decide to put it in that area. It just means that we don't have another $500,000 to build a bar or, you know, I'm sorry about that. And that doesn't, if it doesn't, you know, suit some people in around the place, but you know, I sometimes look at the positives and understand there is investment in the football club. It just happens to be in the playing department.
Can I, in terms of so the question that I'd actually written down was to ask you whether you think it's fair, or you think that the negativity that comes around, and this isn't just from the fan base, but I was listening to the Price of Football podcast with Kieran Maguire over Christmas. And there was a question from a Cobblers fan asking Kieran basically about the way that the club was funded. And he just went through essentially what we can all go through on Companies House to explain it. But it still came across as being a fairly negative sort of thing. But I think on the basis of what you've said about, you know, it's a football wide thing and the way that owner investment is the way that it goes on at the moment. When it comes to the way that yourselves and David put money into the club and then it shows in the book, do you feel, as directors' loans, I mean, do you think it's fair, the negativity that you get about it being shown in that way? Rather than, because you sometimes see people saying, well, other club owners decide to put it in as they turn it into shares or however they do it way. Well, yeah.
The reality is people will use that as a stick to beat us. That's for sure. But it is what it is. I would say the majority of clubs are funded that way. There are a few examples of people turning it equity. Some of that is around financial fair play rules. And some of that is because the reality is even if somebody turns it into equity, they're still going to expect to get it out when they sell the football club. So I would look at it. What amazes me is like, I think you look at Man United's situation and they've got the same situation, but to make their situation a lot worse is, you know, the football club's paying interest on their money, you know, or they're taking it out in dividends, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing that sometimes you look at, and David looks at it, and I look at it and go, bloody hell, we've put money in. We've not taken any interest out. We don't take salaries out. And we're still getting criticized because we're not gifting the club money. I think most football fans or reasonable football fans would not have a problem with somebody saying, well, I'm going to put money in, but I would like to get it out at some point. I don't know when or how or blah, 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 but I would like to at least think I'm going to get it back out and I'm not just going to gift it to the football club. And when you're talking like, listen, I've spent a lot of time and we've probably put money in certain areas that we're not compensate for and don't go against our loans, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're talking about decent amounts of money, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 million, 6 million quid, you you could be aggrieved a little bit that somebody says that you should gift it and you're a bad person because you haven't gifted it. But that's football, isn't it? That's opinions. That's just football. Like, the reality is, I'd be very, you know, you can only listen to certain so much, and you can only, you know, take in so many opinions. But if someone has said to me, you're a bad person, or David's a bad person because you haven't gifted 5 million quid to the football club when you never said you would ever do that, then that's their opinion, and it's never going to affect my life, because I think it's a very unrealistic opinion. You know, as everyone knows, I'm, you know, a West Ham fan. I don't look at the West Ham owners and say you should put your money in and then you gift it to us. Absolutely not. If you put money in, you get it back out. If you can get it. Now, I'm not expecting anyone to get it back out and do anything dodgy or, you know, or do it to the detriment of the football club. But you're not charging interest on loans over 6 years is a gift in itself. Like, bloody hell. Like, what? Sorry, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that. But let's be realistic about this. Let's not, you know, again, it's to do with the real world and the fantasy world. And to be fair, I know Simon very well at Plymouth, and he did convert some of his loans into equity, not all of them, but some of them, and it was a decent amount of money. But I understand why he did it, and I talked to Simon quite a bit, and fair play to Simon, and for doing that. But I do believe that Simon, you know, Simon eventually will look for some return on that, or at least be thinking he might get some return on that at some point. We all do it. We all look at it. We all look as owners and hope for return. I'm sure the guy at Bury did. I'm sure Mel did at Derby, thought he was going to get a return. But we also all write those checks thinking we might not see it again.
I suppose, really, because essentially the ways that, and this is how I think about it. So if you and David are to get your money back, then the easiest way for you to do that is to basically put a price tag on the football club of whatever the debt comes to and say that's how much it will cost to buy the club. And somebody comes along and gives you that money and you go, thanks very much, see you later. The alternative is, of course, everything that, and we're not going to go into it massively, it's just there as a thing of the whole thing about the redevelopment of the land behind the stand. Again, it's a way of you getting that money back in some way, shape or form. And then the argument then becomes, well, how does it benefit the club and X, Y and Z? We haven't got time to go into it. But I can understand exactly where you're coming from, because I look at it and go, well, of course you're going to want to get your money back at some point. And it doesn't matter whether, as you said, it's down as a director loan or whether it's a share. At the end of the day, you put a price tag on the football club for when you want to come to sell it. And if somebody's prepared to pay that money, then you take it and say, thank you very much, shake the hand and go. There isn't really...
It's no different to any other business out there. Like, there's other businesses. I'm sure most of the people, a lot of the people listening have got businesses, and that's how they would... people start businesses, that's how you fund it. You know, it's quite a simple... You know, there's obviously an emotive aspect to football clubs, and I just the reality is I just don't understand the viewpoint that says you should that every owner is responsible to gift the football club money. It makes no sense, and then we go to like how people also, not only do people want owners to gift football clubs money, they actually want them to decide how the owner spends that money. It's quite unbelievable when we talk about unrealistic viewpoints, but it's understandable. It's just football. That's what we know. That's what football fans are. Is, you know, in general, unrealistic because they have no consequence to those thoughts, do they? That's not, you know, football fans in general want to come and watch a game, watch a football club, a football team win on a Saturday. And they're not necessarily, the majority of football clubs don't really care how that happens, you know, and what goes on in the background. And if the football club is sustainable, then that to most football fans, that's a bonus as well. But if they're losing, you know, perfect example, Newcastle. You know, Mike Ashley probably ran Newcastle pretty well in terms of sustainability, but now you're going to have a situation where they're spending, you know, a lot of money, like 25 million quid on a 30-year-old, you know, centre forward who nobody would believe that you'd spend 25 million quid on, and probably giving him a ridiculous amount of money on a weekly basis. You know, no one cares about that. No one really cares. Well, the majority of Newcastle fans, I'm sure, don't really care where that money's come from. And what's funding that? And we've all got our opinions on that. And we've all got our concerns about that. But majority of football fans don't actually worry about the football finances as much as people think. But the reality is, and it goes full, just goes back to the review and the key to football is take away those issues, take away the requirement for owner investment. The truth is, myself and David have talked about this, especially since Tracy Crouch report. And this is where, you know, we lose sight a little bit of, and the East Stand is a very good example. And you're right, we probably don't have time to talk about that right now, but I'm happy to talk about that. So if for example, and on average, we've put in, you know, overall, $500,000, $750,000 a year. If the football club was sustainable, and we'd said, okay, we've got that money to put in, then all of a sudden it changes that dynamic of that investment. Because all of a sudden you could invest. Like everyone complains about, you know, everyone complains, or not everyone, but certain people complain about the stadium. All right. So we look at it and you look at that and you go, okay, so we're already putting our money into the playing department, rightly or wrongly, et cetera, et cetera. But now James comes to us and said, we need $100,000 to change the seats. Like if the football club was sustainable and James said, we need to change the seats, it becomes a whole different decision for an owner, because then you're looking to invest or not even change the seats. Let's build 2,000 seats. Let's put a pub in and let's spend £1 million on the pub. If you weren't having to fund the football club anyway, as an owner, you've got a completely different decision. And suddenly that becomes a more attractive investment because you're not having to fund over here in the shape of $750,000. You can actually fund this or a community program, which, you know, or a new education center or a training ground. It's perfect examples. Like we've got the East Stand is a prime example. For us, it's a primer. You know, we've got a tremendous amount of money tied up in the football club, which everyone knows about. But we need a truck. It'd be nice to have our own training ground. It'd be nice to fix the seats. It'd be nice to, you know, improve the facilities. But do we invest above and beyond what we've already got in it because those are nice to have? Or do we actually look to, and we've also got to build an East Stand, don't forget. So do we look to do that? And I know everybody, you know, some people will say, oh, you said you would do it from your own money, which is we're still going to do, but we never said we're going to gift the club money for that. And this ring fence money is an absolute falsity in terms of, you know, it was an interview that I did 6 years ago, which has been dragged up and smacked me over the head 100 times, but it was actually false in terms of what I said. I never said ring fence money. No way, shape, or form. But anyway, and we've still got the money for the stand. We've always got, but we would be bad custodians of this football club if we recklessly, and also custodians of our own money, if we recklessly said, let's just build the stand and then not look to recoup some of that money back for the football club. You know, we still have to remember that land has never been owned by the football club. We got that land. And the reason we got that land is we needed to increase the asset base for the football club. So then the football club could potentially pay us back as owners. But it's only those are decisions. If there's money in the bank, then maybe we pay ourselves back. But if there's money in the bank, maybe we get a training ground. Maybe we get seats. We're not looking at this. And it's been perceived always that, you know, again, being whacked over the head 100 times, but this is our, you know, some people, I think we're going to change our lives with this. You know, this isn't our financial portfolio. The football club is part of the ownership's portfolio, but we're trying to do the best for the football club. And we still believe, and I've said this from the start, and the Tracy Crouch report is so important for that. The biggest thing that killed football clubs is debt and outside debt. And the less debt you can have on a football club, the stronger position you're going to be in. So why would we not make decisions which reduce the debt? Whether the debt's to us, the debts to HMRC, the debts to you, Charles, or you, Danny, it doesn't really matter. But a football club without debt is a much stronger position. Full stop.
Yeah, I think that's the good thing about this report is that it's hopefully going to change some of that sort of thing. I think before we finish it off, it's quite important to say that women's football was a part of the report. It was saying that it should be treated with parity and given its own dedicated review, which I think we can all agree on. But what can we do now? What can fans listening to this do now to show their support for the review?
I think there's some stuff online, and maybe I'll ask Gareth to put it up there again. It's talking to your MPs. This now, I think the process of this now is we have to try and get this in the Queen's speech. And I'm not an ideal politician. I don't know exactly what's going on. I make no reference to garden parties or anything like that. But I'm actually meeting Andrew Lua, MP, a bit later on to talk about this. And it's about getting MP support. So it'll be about fans writing to their MPs to say that they need to support this as it passes through the government process. We need to get this into legislation. And then it's trying to speak to the Premier League owners and directors and chief execs and try and get them to be a bit more generous.
You can't see the smile that was on Kelvin's face while he was saying that last bit, by the way, but it was there.
Yeah. If you did want to read the report as well, it's on the fsa.org.uk. So it's a long document, but it's worthwhile having a read through. Thank you so much, Kelvin, for joining us today. We really appreciate the time you've taken to discuss that really interesting stuff. Thank you, Charles, for coming along as well. And we'll speak to you again soon, Kelvin. Thank you.
No
again.
Problem. Thanks, guys. And, appreciate it.
Good stuff. Speak to you soon.
Way! There's the cup. There's the pictures you'll see on tomorrow's back pages. The Cobblers are going through into Division One. Bring them on because we deserve it.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
Support the podcast on Patreon by joining the It's All Cobblers to Me fan club. Every month, you'll receive access to exclusive bonus content, such as our Meet the Staff series, hear our player interviews before anyone else, and be invited to regular meetups. By joining the fan club, you'll be helping us to continue our sponsorship of NTFC women's player Abby Bruin and enable us to keep the podcast and all our other content going to the high standards you expect. To join the fan club, go to patreon.com/cobblers2me.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.